All right. Thanks everyone for joining. Welcome. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Vikas Kansal, a product lead for Gemini AI subscriptions at Google. Vikas works at one of the most important challenges in technology today and how to turn cutting-edge AI into sustainable businesses. At Google, he helped shape the subscription and monetization strategy behind Gemini, Google's flagship AI platform, and he has been deeply involved in thinking about how AI changes traditional SaaS pricing models. Many of you may know him from his latest post on Lenny's podcast called Why Traditional SaaS Premium Playbooks Don't Work in AI and What Founders Should Do Instead. So today we're going to be exploring how Google thinks about AI subscriptions, the future of SaaS pricing, usage-based pricing versus subscriptions, and what AI founders are getting wrong. Goss, welcome to the Growth Path session. I'm really excited to have you here. Would love to get started by learning about how you got into subscriptions and doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. Very excited to talk to you all. How I got started doing subscription, it's been a journey. I joined Google 10 years back as a software engineer, working on some of the toughest and scalable engineering problems. And while I was doing that, I realized like what a place Google is, where technology meets business meets users, and started exploring my path inside Google, doing product management and like exploring the subscription business we had with storage at that time. My goal at that time was to move beyond the anchor of storage, a subscription, to find something that is more premium across Google. And 2.5 years back, AI happened. It's such a powerful, profound technology shifts of our times where it's been incredible. Like the cost to serve, the value it creates instantly for users was a challenge which we needed to meet, and monetization was top of mind. Generally, we see large-scale companies build systems where they want to acquire users first, and monetization will happen when the users start loving and using the product. But AI was like day zero. Monetization was required across the industry, ChatGPT, Anthropic, Google, like anybody that uses AI needed to start monetizing at the get-go for two reasons. One, the supply constraints and like the amount of users we can serve. And two, it was actually an expensive technology. So yeah, I started doing that, and the rest is history. It's been incredible being on this journey.
Yeah, totally. You know, in these sessions, we typically do them live in, you know, the Stripe office, and we like to cover kind of the holy trinity of subscriptions, which is like the acquisition, retention, monetization. I would love to kind of get started with acquisition. You know, you've been doing subscriptions for a long time. How have you kind of seen, you know, the acquisition playbook change over the last, you know, year or so versus what worked before? What are some strategies that are working now versus before?
Yeah, it's been a very interesting journey on the acquisition front for the AI subscriptions. The competition, like typically what happens is subscription business, you have a value proposition, you have a unique thing to offer which users are willing to pay, and then you like create different price points, offers, marketing funnels, getting user to use your free product, and then acquire them into the subscription funnel, right? With AI, like it's the use case, the technology, all are being found at the same time. Like it's one tool that can do multiple things for you. And even the free product itself is so good, it's so smarter that the acquisition funnel looks like actually seemingly tough for acquiring user to the payment process to the subscription funnel, right? I like what we treated like twofold. One, top of the funnel is important. Like how many users use your free product? That's your top of the funnel. How to grow that, how to acquire that, working very closely with the product team that's working on the chat apps and the coding apps and all that stuff. But the second one was the more interesting acquisition funnel was around acquiring users using free trials as a means to give them like some instant magic of the product. We did a couple of those large scale campaigns. Students, for example, is one. We have a big, very generous offer in India with Jio, telecom provider, etc. So like really leaning in on certain strategic segments of users, giving them disproportionate amount of like trials, value to love, use the product and drive the word of mouth and that acquisition funnel with that regard. So in traditional subscriptions, you never see that. Like nobody gives 12 months of free trial of any product. But with AI, like yes, it was a very different ball game.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, you know, a lot of companies test different trial durations. You know, you've probably experienced doing that as well across a different suite of products. What have you found you know, what's been most effective when it comes to some of the AI products? What trial durations have been most you know, most useful?
Yeah, it's not a one size fits all. It depends on your user segment. It depends upon your product cycle. It depends upon like what feature or model are being launched at what time. So we run experiments all the time. We keep optimizing using ML signals on what to offer which user. I can give you some examples. Like I told you, the student trial, we did a 12-month student trial. I've met with students personally. They love it. It literally, like some of them say, changed their lives in the sense like the access to the powerful models when they actually need it, with as being a student and not being able to pay. So those are 12-month trials, right? The goal there is like long-term ecosystem retention, not immediate monetization, versus there are some other form of trials or discounts we do. Like for New Year, we ran a 50% off New Year offer with the annual plan. That did pretty well on that time. Like you pay 50% upfront for the whole year and you get a subscription. We also have like a monthly trials. I think like if I have to broadly say what works best, I think intro pricing works best. There's some skin in the game of the user, like even having like a 50% off or 75% off for a month, etc. Like where users put some skin in the game by paying something and then you are willing to like get some value out of what you have paid, puts you in that like acquisition loop where you are kind of using the product, engaging, find the value and you retain better than like just free trial, 7 days or a month free trial where there's not enough urgency to actually use the product because you're not paying anything and you don't have enough skin in the game. Yeah,
interesting. Wow, so heavy discounts to get users started. And then also, you mentioned partnerships. So you know, did some partnerships with Jio in India, I believe. Curious, what are some of those learnings from that, you know, when it comes to acquisitions?
The way we look at partnerships is like an incremental channel for us, right? Like Google has already like huge distribution across all its 1P apps, Chrome, Gmail, etc. Like people use, love it. Billions of users are on the products already. We work with a lot of partners across the globe to build like incremental user where which we can't reach directly in local markets where partners have a better reach. But also like the value partners add to our offerings is incredible. The marketing, sometimes they have the form of payment with the user already if they are already have a subscription relationship with the user, the localized teams, being able to be like in the store, in person, in different markets. So it's a very much a core part of our go-to-market strategy, working with partners, telcos, OEMs. Yeah. And I think like it has done great wonders for us.
Yeah. Very interesting. So we talked about kind of, you know, the bill channels where, you know, through trials, through heavy discounts, talked about partnerships. What about buy channels? What have you seen there? Have you done any experimentation with buying ads or, you know, other sorts of other forms of, you know, buy channels?
Yeah. I mean, Google is a marketing company, right? So there is a lot of performance PMAX, AI Max kind of systems we have on ads. We do run like DR campaigns, direct response campaigns for acquiring users across all prominent channels, YouTube, Instagram, Google, Discover, etc. And yeah, it's like it helps with awareness. It helps with acquisition, especially if you are running like a New Year offer or a student campaign, right? Mm-hmm. So the buy channels are effective. It's another incremental growth channel for us. Like there's ONO, there is partnerships, there is the marketing channels, different user cohort segments of users with different propensity to like engage and pay come through different channels. So it's been an interesting journey on slicing our users by different acquisition channels and nurturing them and seeing like what different kind of behaviors each of them bring.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for sharing that. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk now about monetization. So, you know, your article on AI monetization generated a lot of discussion. So we'd love to unpack that a bit more. So tell us a little bit more about like, you know, why does a traditional SaaS premium model break in AI? And what have your learnings been so far on that?
Yeah, this is something like I was like thinking about top of my mind when we started working on this. Generally, like traditional SaaS model, what happens is the cost to serve does not scale. Like I'll give you an example. There are multiple subscriptions out there, Slack, like Zoom. For example, the Zoom call we are on, it's a subscription, right? So as you add more seats or more people join the call, the the incremental cost is not huge. It's a very minor incremental cost. But in AI, every single seat is like every time a user presses enter, a query goes to your cloud, the TPUs are burnt, and there is an actual cloud bill generated, right? So the cost to serve of every incremental user is significant. It's almost equal to, like, it scales as users scale, which we are seeing even with agentic stuff. Like, as you have multi-agent and you have more agents using the tokens, like, the cost keeps scaling. So this is not a model where your traditional subscription, like, you have some features which are premium and hidden behind a paywall, and you can only unlock if you're a paid subscriber, and that's how the monetization strategy was in the traditional SaaS models. It completely breaks because, one, the free product is so good. Two, your cost to serve of incremental user is, you have a lot of agency to choose different products, etc. So we had to reinvent the whole, like, playbook for monetization, if you will, for AI. And, like, while I was chatting with Lenny, like, he was interested to know more, and it actually helped me, like, put down the way learnings, my thoughts in that article, which, like, literally, like, is my work from past 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say is, like, you know, you're finding that, you know, there's a lot of startups popping up, a lot of new companies. What are, like, you know, founders' misunderstanding about AI economics that you've noticed in some of the new products out there?
I think, like, I don't think, like, a lot of the startups are finding it wrong. I think they are looking at it in the right way, if you will. I think the story has changed so much in the last 2-3 years, where every startup now is reporting ARR instead of reporting other metrics like DAOs and MAUs and et cetera. Like, the whole industry has shifted into a very ARR-centric model. Like, Lovable just, like, announced their ARR yesterday. Cursor did that a few months back, and now Cursor is acquired by SpaceX. Every startup is now starting to report ARR, which kind of shows, like, how monetization is important with AI. And at the same time, every startup, even, like, large companies, are subsidizing AI. Like, the ARR they're generating is subsidized heavily. And that's not different from what used to happen before. But, like, the metrics on monetization has changed. Like, you need to monetize day zero. I'm seeing more and more where every single startup, as they start to create features and value, I see the tiers being there day zero almost now.
Totally. And when do you think, like, you know, founders should kind of, like, use subscription versus use usage-based pricing? Have you kind of come up with some frameworks for that, you know, as, you know, across the different products that you're responsible for?
Yeah, I don't think it's either or. I think, like, it's a mix of both. Your subscriptions are also sort of a usage-based pricing. It's only that it's bucketed. You create your usage buckets. You have to, every product has multiple user segments, but there are, like, two distinct cohorts of people who want fixed cost or predictable cost versus users who are more comfortable with variable cost based on how they're using. And you need to serve both those segments, right? Your typical consumers, your typical solopreneurs, hobbyists, prosumers, they are more, like, comfortable with a fixed cost, predictable cost model. They don't want their cost to run crazy. They are okay with sort of, like, a usage bucket. That's where how we at Google have our Plus, Pro, and Ultra tiers, where they're predictable buckets. Like, you go and use the product, you use different models, but your cost is, etc. There's other segment, more, like, not doing this as a hobby, but I'm actually doing it more professionally as full-time jobs, maybe. Users are powered and more comfortable with a variable cost, where, yes, like, I get some usage in my subscription, but also, like, if I want to use more, I have a way to extra. So for the others, which is the model, like, on the go.
Got it. Yeah, I think you just cut out a little bit there, but now it's back. But yeah, and what do you think about seat-based pricing? You know, what are your thoughts on, is it slowly dying, or what's going to be the future of seat-based pricing?
Seat-based pricing will evolve. So I was giving you, like, a preview of what is happening, like, agentic stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So multi-agent, your Codex, your anti-gravity, your Claude code are all multi-agents, right? You can't have a seat-based pricing where, like, hey, Vikas, I'll charge you whatever, $20 a month or $200 a month, and you have access to this tool and you can spawn agents, right? It's not fair. Like, if I have one agent versus 20 agents versus 100 agents working at the same time at the same pricing, right? So I think seed-based model will evolve where it will be all your agents' usage will be pooled and there will be a usage-based monetization on top of seed-based, right? I could see it being more usage-based than charging for every single agent you spin up, right? Like that's kind of like not very empowering where like every time I spin up an agent, I'm paying a seat price for my agent, right? And those agents will not be ephemeral. Like they will spin up for an hour and they might be dead after an hour and then spin up another agent, right? So there's no way of like good tracking mechanism there. So I feel like seed-based pricing will completely evolve to a very usage-based pricing, both for consumers and for enterprises. I can see that both.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, when it comes to like the actual pricing, what frameworks and, you know, tools have you used to come up with the actual, you know, pricing? There's obviously in the industry, there's quite a few different, you know, frameworks that people use in the past, you know, the Van Westendorp and like, you know, willingness to pay and all sorts of other kind of tools. I feel like that's probably changed quite a bit, you know, within the last year or so. How have you seen those frameworks evolve? Or are you kind of using the kind of the key principles from them still?
Yeah, you're right. Like all those tools and conjoint studies, etc. There's a funny story, and I'm sure like you and your listeners probably already know about that, about how ChatGPT came up with the pricing of their first year. It was literally a form literally posted on Reddit. Saying 3 years back, hey, we are launching this tool. We want to put a subscription. What do you think should be the price? And there were three questions, like 10, 20, and 50. And there was a poll. I don't know, like 100 people responded, and he just picked a price. So it's crazy how prices are being picked right now. This is all subsidized. So willingness to pay, the economics, etc., are being figured out in parallel. But I think like the industry is kind of converging and being risk averse in a way where everybody's trying to like kind of price and position it in that sweet $20 price point, which is your flagship tier, which most people you think will pay $20 a month. The value every company, every product is packing inside $20 is different for multiple reasons, breakage, ecosystem, and whatnot. And then you have your power user tiers of $100, $200. Then you have your entry level tiers, which some are offering at $5, $8, $10 price point. So yes, like, traditionally, willingness to pay was a very good metric, but with AI, what are you willing to pay for what? Like the features, the things that your models can do change. Like I can tell you, like by the time a research study is designed, goes out, collects data, and comes back to us, we are already late in launching our pricing tier, right? So yes, fortunately or unfortunately, like the studies are more informing our decision after the fact than driving the decision making. And a lot of it is done keeping competitors in mind, keeping elasticity in mind, and then seeing how much value you can pack inside the tiers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, price experimentation is like a big, you know, lever when it comes to growth. I'm curious, like what are like some of the surprises that you've seen, you know, as you've done price experimentation and the consumer's willingness to pay for AI?
Price experimentation, yes. Like generally, we stay away from, we do offers. Like I was explaining, the discounts, deep discounts, lesser discounts, etc. We have the $20 flagship tier. We do a lower and higher price to capture the different price points. The most like interesting learning which I had, and I was trying to give a preview of that, was the more discount you give, you not necessarily get the most high intent user. The retention is higher on users who actually signed up for full price or users who kind of had the least discount versus the users you acquire as free trial or the most deeply discounted. Generally, the funnel looks bigger. You get more users, but end of the day, retention is not as much as you would expect.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, you know, talking about retention, yeah, what are like, you know, within retention, you have voluntary churn and involuntary churn. How have you seen kind of that change in the last year or so? You know, has voluntary churn kind of increased with like, you know, so many free options and alternatives, or like what have you seen on the involuntary churn side of things?
Involuntary churn is a sin. Like I tell my team, like you can't have involuntary churn, like which means like user didn't want to churn, it churned because a form of payment failed or something of that sort. So it's absolutely not acceptable to have any involuntary churn. These are things, especially with AI, like we should be able to predict how likely the involuntary churn is going to happen because these are all like fixed things, right? Like your credit card is expiring, or you have deleted your credit card, or the quality of the credit card was not good, etc. So those things should be very proactively handled. And we have not seen a ton of changes or behavior changes on the involuntary side. The voluntary churn, yes, like AI is still in a phase where, like, for majority of the users, it's not a must have, right? Like you can, it's not a utility or a necessity that you absolutely need, which like say a shipping, Amazon Prime or a storage or your music app is. The free product itself is kind of good enough for most use cases. So the voluntary churn on AI is still on the higher side compared to other benchmarks and other subscriptions. The other factor is also the switching cost. If like you'll be surprised, the switching cost is actually not very high, especially for developers. Like if you're using Codex or Antigravity or Cloud Code, your code is all in GitHub. You can point your IDE to different code bases and like run prompts. So the context your app has is sort of limited. I think with personalization and memory in product memory, like ChatGPT, Gemini, etc., are building user habits where you are kind of more engaged into the ecosystem and the switching cost between the apps are higher. So we like, again, like we do see higher level of churn on AI subscriptions compared to traditional subscriptions. And the idea is like get your users to love your product, engage more. The more they use, the more value they find, the more they would retain.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when it comes to, you know, tactics, you know, with voluntary churn, there is like a standard playbook of, you know, tactics that you use. Same with involuntary churn, right? Voluntary churn, you're kind of optimizing your cancellation flow. You're, you know, putting them in different types of plan, pausing subscriptions, you know, all sorts of things like that. Same with involuntary churn, you know, in the past, you know, there was kind of retry schedules, you know, trying different kind of charging on certain times of the day, you know, using some of the off-the-shelf smart retry tools. I'm curious, like, how have those tactics changed? Have you tried anything new? Or are you finding the same tactics are still kind of applied these days?
I think the most of the playbook on churn and retention is sort of like almost same, like 70-80%. You're right, like the grace periods, the retry mechanisms, the time of the day, email, and all that stuff. So I think those have not changed. But what one thing I realized is there is no replacement for product market fit, right? Like you need a great product to keep users. Engagement is a big driver of retention. So as you see users not using or not engaging with your product, it's a very strong signal that they're going to churn. So nudging users to come back and use has been one thing which we have run an A/B on, which kind of like definitely helps. Packing more value helps with retention. So like the bundled approach with Google has with packing storage and to packing health, etc. inside your subscription, like which, for example, like your storage peace of mind is very important, right? Like AI is not that utility yet where everybody just absolutely needs paid AI, but cloud storage, everybody needs paid cloud storage. So those tactics have been very much helpful in driving voluntary churn down for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've talked about acquisition, some of the things that have worked. We've talked about, you know, monetization feature of that. And then, you know, we talked about some of the retention things that are working for you. Curious a little bit more talking about the future of AI monetization. Where do you see AI pricing look like in like the next 5 years?
It's anybody's bet. The it's all kind of like depends on the build outs, right? Like the demand and supply. Right now, demand is outpacing supply a lot. The amount of tokens that are needed to do any task is very high, and the cost to serve those are also very high because of data center limitations, etc. I don't have a crystal ball into 5 years, but what I would imagine is, as we have seen across every tech cycle, there's a lot of innovation that happens when there is a new technology shift. And I can imagine all the NVIDIAs of the world kind of like over-investing with like they build out the chips, the data centers, making compute available. It's a whole full stack, right? Like from electricity generation, etc. So my hope is like AI becomes more accessible, more available, and like more valuable for everybody using it. There is definitely a monetization that will happen on top of that layer, but it should be in the spirit of abundance and not in the spirit of scarcity, like it is right now, right? Like right now, every app there's a scarcity of tokens and there's anxiety of running out of like limits. Even if you're paying, your task getting paused, come back in 5 hours and all that stuff. So my like hope is in 5 years, we have enough build out that the anxiety, the scarcity moves to abundance. People are still willing to pay, but can do like a lot of stuff done while they are using all these products.
Yeah, for sure. And what do you think, you know, how do you think the AI changes the value of software itself?
Like everybody's a builder. Building a software should be very easy going forward. Like you could even question like, what is the software? Is the harness on top of data enough to kind of like do everything you need to do? Build your UIs on the fly, build the charts, the graphs, the things that you need to get done. So it's up in the air, like how software will evolve in this new world. I've seen, read about phones in the future, which may be appless. Like you don't need phones. The operating system is your interface with AI, and you can call a cab, send a message, check your emails, watch a video, not needing different apps or softwares and having a single interface feels scary. But the power with which these things are moving and the way it personalizes, it's very much possible.
Yeah. You know, every product person that I know, product manager, is like, you know, up late nights, you know, vibe coding, building tools. A lot of them are, you know, having, I think challenges still monetizing and actually generating revenue. They're probably spending a lot more money than, you know, than they're making, especially on the amount of time they're also spending jumping between different products. Which opportunities do you think, you know, founders or these builders are overlooking today?
Right now, we are in this phase where like people are trying this technology to build stuff. Like the cost of building has significantly dropped, but we are still like in a phase where you still need the ideas, like what to build and what to develop. Like that has not matured or changed as much. So I think the basics of our product management, like what user problem you're trying to solve, is not going away. I think like there's a famous quote, like if it becomes cheaper to call, it's not like I have more things to say now, right? Like similarly, like yes, it's cheaper to build and easier to build now, but what do you build has to come from grounds up, from like the basic, like what user problem you're trying to solve. Like my daughter is on a summer break right now, and like she was trying to use some tools to wipe code, etc. And yeah, sure, like create a snake and ladder game app for me, but like you can't go and sell another snake and ladder app, right? Like there are a million snake and ladder apps already out there. So what do you build? It's still not something like AI can tell you. It can brainstorm with you. It has all the world's information to kind of like be creative with you. But that's something PMs have to come up with, solving user problem.
Yeah, absolutely. If you were to start a company tomorrow, where would you build?
Where would you build? In the sense, like what ecosystem you will adopt to build?
Yeah. Just where would you build?
I'm biased. I will build with Gemini on AI Studio and Anti-Gravity, but to each their own, like hedge, try what works best. There are trade-offs for sure. But yeah, like Gemini is the best place to build right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no worries. Take your time. So we have, I'm going to ask a few rapid fire questions, and then we're going to pass it off to, you know, some of the folks in the audience to ask questions, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. So just one word or short answers. Most underrated AI company right now.
Lovable.
Most overrated AI trend that you're finding.
RSI.
Interesting. And one skill every PM should learn right now.
User empathy.
Yeah. And what's your favorite Google product?
Photos.
Nice. And AI company you'll be watching very, very closely
this year. Anthropic.
Nice. Big price. Yeah. Big price lesson that you've learned. It's the biggest pricing lesson you've learned. Yeah.
Free is good enough.
Yeah. And last one, what will surprise people most about AI over the next decade?
Abundance.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the, answers. We've got some great insights. Now, I just want to let the audience ask a few questions. I know we have a few in the chat. Not sure if you want to unmute and ask the question, feel free.
Yeah, well, hey, thanks, Vikas. One question about, I think you mentioned using like trial pricing to get a lot of users in the door. My question was, how have you dealt with things like, for example, like this expectation that, the trial pricing continues, right? Where at the end of the year, when users see that now you have to pay like full price, right? So you go from like paying maybe, I don't know, like $100 for Gemini Pro to whatever the true price is. What are like some either tactics or strategies you've used to sort of get users accustomed to the sort of upcoming price increase? And have you like, you know, expanded that trial offer? Like, just sort of curious what else sort of plays into this?
Yeah, I think being transparent helps a lot. So in terms of trial pricing, when we sign up users on a trial, we are very upfront and transparent on you have 50% off for 3 months, then the price after 3 months is XYZ, right? So being very upfront, we see users signing up and like canceling. Some users cancel already in as a deferred cancellation, waiting for the price increase, right? So we use two tactics there. Like before the price changes, we do nudge them, like making sure like to tell them we're like, hey, by the, and this is for all the users, again, in the spirit of transparency, like your price is increasing next week to XYZ dollars after their 3 months. Take action or your price will be the new price. We do see some drop-offs even there. We want to retain users without regret. We want users to feel good about what they're paying. The users who kind of are canceled or are pending cancellation, we also reach out to them, kind of like giving an overview of how much value we generated for them over the, like how much they use, what was their usage pattern, what value we generated, and also nudge them to use more while their price is there. So like all in all, like there is transparency, there is like reaching out to users. But I think it's not a price increase per se, right? Like that would be more, users would be anchored on the lower price. Here it's like easing into the price and they know the price is actually like a higher price, which will be charged a few months later.
Cool, thanks. That was super helpful. I had another question more about sort of as a Gemini PM. What's some interesting ways you've used Gemini in your, you know, life as a PM or as a PM lead? Anything outside, you know, PRDs and meeting transcripts and notes? Just sort of curious because likely we haven't used Gemini or AI to its fullest potential. So sort of asking there.
Yeah, my most interesting use case is like prepping for a meeting. And there are some internal dog foods where Calendar is connected to Gemini, is connected to all your other peak contacts, the personalized contacts, where before I go to a meeting, it summarizes all my past interactions with the group, the agenda and the topic and my talking points, which are private to me. And like, it's kind of having a business partner, ABP assistant without actually having an assistant, where like prepping for the meeting is not a thing anymore. Like 2 minutes before the meeting, I can skim through my notes. And that's been my biggest Gemini use case outside of like just PRDs and coding.
Cool. That's super helpful.
Great. Thanks so much for the question. Anyone else have a question for Vikas? Right. Well, Vikas, thank you so much for joining us today. What's the best way for people to connect with you?
Yeah, reach out to me on Twitter, DM me. I try to be responsive and trying to build a community around monetization and AI. It's going to be a long road. We are only scratching the surface here. And like I said, there'll be a lot of abundance. There'll be a lot of like tokens maxing going on there. So good luck. And yeah, please reach out on Twitter.
Great. And we'll be posting kind of the summary from today, as well as like, you know, the key items that we discussed on growthpad.blog. And then stay tuned for some more sessions like this with other subscription growth leaders around the industry, and hoping Vikas will meet in person someday and have something like this in person at the Stripe office sometime.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Great. Thank you so much for the time, and I really appreciate it. Look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.